So I come at the sort of what I do from a background in art and design. So I actually studied illustration at university. And I was never really that interested in doing drawings or kind of flat images and designs. I was kind of more interested in like the potential for pushing the medium of illustration further. So I was super interested in, you know, interactivity, and I was playing with Arduinos and using like conductive paint and so on. And so I really got into tech through this kind of process. So yeah, I was kind of, yeah, coming at the sort of the tech angle from like a maker perspective, and I learned everything I know just by myself, like Googling stuff and using open source tools and, you know, following tutorials that the community has created, whether it's an Arduino project or whether it's 3D printing, whether that's, you know, this kind of tactile, hands-on tech. So I really love hardware. And I'm interested in software from a perspective of, like, making hardware better, which kind of, yeah, I guess that kind of, that's where I'm at in terms of the approach I have to the tech industry. It's quite like a sort of specific niche, I guess. And yeah, I've sort of become a freelance creative technologist. So I work on lots of different projects for clients or agencies or brands where there's some kind of creative problem solving needed in combination with a technical solution. So maybe I'll be building like an installation that has like sensors, or maybe I'll be producing like a game or like an app that somehow, you know, it's interactive. It's very broad. Maybe I'll work on like a product design prototype. So I sort of, that's part of my kind of day-to-day, is that I'm working with clients. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, I'm also teaching. So I teach creative people mostly how to use technology within their work to kind of to change their work, or to inject it with the sort of coding or electronic skills that you know, designers and artists and creatives in general sort of can really put to use to be able to like enhance their practice, essentially. So that's something that I really love doing as well. I kind of always have this teaching practice alongside, which maybe made me quite a good candidate for organizing hackathons, because I'm kind of all about sharing the sort of the joy of making stuff and like figuring out the potential of technology within specific subjects. And really bringing people together in a way to like experience how they use technology and their take on it. Which is quite a loose, like creative approach to it, I guess.
How did you find your path? Was it just trial and error? Did you have people really encouraging you to explore and kind of, because what the path you've developed is kind of a self-made road. And did you have people that inspired you to kind of make your own path?
That's a good question. I think I started, so the way I got into sort of the skills that I have, for example, and I think a lot of my work is kind of, the process is I will learn something new because I'm just like curious about how to make something, like whether that's about a circuit or whether that's a piece of code or like a concept in, you know, whatever. And then I'll sort of make it, and then I'll want to share it with other people. So I was really sort of working it out by myself a lot of the time and just using my own sort of energy to push me forward. But that could only obviously take me so far. The one sort of big thing that affected my sort of technical skills was that I got a job as a technician in the Hackspace after I finished my university. So at the university, I opened up a Hackspace workshop, and I was teaching people how to use Arduino and coding and stuff in their work. And I was really just like, you know, I had a purpose, and I had this kind of job where I was the only person in the building who knew what an Arduino was when they did the job application. So I got the job, and I didn't know about electronic theory. I didn't know what the red wire and the black wire did. Like, I was just completely new. Like, I didn't remember physics at school. I was completely at zero. And I remember looking at all this stuff and being like, I don't need to use this. This doesn't seem relevant. And then, you know, a year later, I sort of obviously like had used all of it and realized that it's all valid and interesting. So that was like the big sort of push that I had technically. It was sort of like I was paid to learn, luckily, because I had a job that required me to learn stuff. And then from there, I've definitely had people who've kind of looked out for me. And, you know, I guess because what I do is quite niche in a certain way, because I'm really on that balance between creative design, art world, and like, you know, commercial advertising world and technology. And I'm making projects that are quite, you know, project focused and one off and a bit different, rather than like the mass production engineering side of tech. I think people have taken risks, I guess, with me, which I think is, you know, I feel really lucky to have. And that sort of helped me get to, you know, this stage in my career where I'm sort of able to sustain myself with, you know, what I love to do. And yeah, I mean, in terms of specific mentors, I mean, you kind of pick people up on the way. Like I really love, you know, connecting with people that I work with, and then they sort of, you know, everyone's nice, you know, everyone that I've encountered actually has been very nice. I don't know if that's because I'm naive or like because I'm happy getting on with most people, but yeah, everyone's really, I think also when you do something that's a bit different or a bit like interesting or creative, people are kind of there for you and they sort of want to help out where they can, which is super nice. But yeah, a lot of it's just been me like kind of nerding out and trying to learn stuff and just being like, oh, this is cool, I want to share it kind of thing. So
how did you make your way into the hackathon scene and the kind of sex tech scene?
Mm-hmm. So I have a business called Touchy Feely Tech, and that started as a kind of, I guess I tentatively started it as a project because I'm, you know, a designer sort of person. So I like to think of projects instead of businesses. But in a way, it was always a business because I was, you know, hoping that it would become a product that I could sell. And it's basically a DIY vibrator kit, and where you assemble it in a workshop setting, or you can assemble it by yourself at home or with a friend or partner. And in the process of assembling a sex toy, you learn about coding, electronics, and this sort of STEM subjects. If you know, a different foundational knowledge for all different kinds of like STEM concepts, basically. And then you also learn about sex education and your own body and pleasure and this kind of idea of like body literacy and figuring out, you know, how you can bring your own experiences to that piece of technology. So that was like that was my project that I sort of started a couple of years ago. And that really came out of my own experiences learning how to do coding and electronics. So I was sort of like, oh, it would be fun to have an educational kit that was for someone like me who's just like wants to make something fun and like relatable and, you know, culturally a bit more like interesting or significant than just like a radio or like a, you know, just these kind of classic DIY kits that you get for electronics that are either for like kids or for people who just are very old school, you know? So that was kind of the project that got me into sex tech because I just followed it and I kept trying to, you know, develop it as a business and as a workshop. And we sort of distributed 100 kits in our MVP, which was super, really, really good. We kind of 3D printed all of them, which, you know, took a lot of time, but it was a really good kind of like first step. And then through that, I've sort of really been validated like into the sex tech industry. And met all of these amazing people who are really interested in the sort of idea and what we stand for with Touchy Feely Tech and everything we're trying to do. And in terms of hackathons, so I was focusing so much on the product and trying to really solve some of the challenges that the product was throwing up. Like, how do you do something in low volumes, but also where like plastics are involved? How do you kind of, you know, don't go straight to injection molding, but like, you know, how do you make something that's not 3D printed? And I was kind of like really wrapped up in all of these issues or challenges of having a hardware business, basically. And then I was approached by Creative Coding Utrecht, which is a kind of like an organization in the Netherlands who put on events around creative coding, and they sort of bring designers and artists and technologists together, and whoever else wants to join, obviously everyone joins in. And you know, to kind of, they run lots of different events and workshops and do like the live coding things. And they were like, oh, we're doing you know, we're running, would you like to run a workshop, like a vibrator workshop? And I was kind of just like, maybe we should do a hackathon. Like, maybe this is more than just a vibrator workshop, because it's kind of the first hackathon, the Rainbow Zen hackathon, was all about representation in art and technology. So like really exploring lots of different voices in games and in, so it's like an exhibition actually. So the whole event itself was originally an exhibition and I was meant to do a workshop. But yeah, it just felt very appropriate that we should do something which is a lot more like participatory and community oriented and really something that people could come to who had no experience of the subject of art, tech, and you know, these kind of more like queer voices and more kind of sex positive voices. And so that was the moment where I just became a hackathon organizer. And I like to produce stuff in my, you know, my freelance jobs. I often, if I can't do a project technically myself, I'll like become a producer and I'll get a team together and I'll, you know, I love doing that as well. I think it's like one of the funnest parts of my job. So I kind of took to it quite naturally in terms of like being able to organize it and put it together, especially because I've sort of, yeah, been to hackathons before and I know what it feels like to be, for it to be my first hackathon and all that stuff. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it came about, really. Yeah, what else?
What were some of the challenges in running a sex tech hackathon, and what were some of the unexpected successes?
So the challenges, I mean, a hackathon is just a huge, huge thing to organize. Like, even if it's like a small event, so like with the Rainbow's End hackathon, it was really this kind of spontaneous decision, right? To just like, let's just do a hackathon, it'll be really fun. And I thought, oh, well, you know, a hackathon's an event where people come and they bring their ideas. So like, it's really about the people who are making it. And I don't think I have to organize very much. And then obviously you kind of start and you're like, oh my gosh, who's going to write the like introduction? Who's going to do the MC? Like, who's going to organize the prizes? Who's going to get the speakers? Who's going to reply to everyone's kind of anxious emails about if they can apply and if it's the deadline's passed? And so, you know, it kind of, one of the challenges for me was just like, really just how much work it is to organize. And then on the day or the weekend it happens and you're like, you know, it all pays off because it goes really smoothly if you prepare properly. Which is especially with an online event, like really important to make sure that all the prep was there. And also with the sex tech hackathon, it's super important to also be really mindful of the code of conduct for, especially also with online spaces, making sure that everyone who's coming is really aware of like the implications of misconduct and how to sort of behave in these spaces properly. You've got to really keep an eye on that because it can be such a vulnerable, sensitive sort of area to be discussing. If you want it to be. And so that was one of the big challenges. And then I suppose also the online format is a challenge too, because it is an intimate thing. And for the next hackathon, which we've got planned, we're going to put more time into sort of really creating a bit more of like a ritualistic space around the online space. So like really working with the limitations of the online space to kind of make the experience of the hackathon better. Because I think before, for the first hackathon, we were sort of just like, it's online, that's too bad, let's just, you know, do our best.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of more like, well, how can we use that to our advantage and to make it like a unique experience for people? Mm-hmm. And then successes, I mean, I think just like how awesome it is, how people turn up to the event and they make it amazing and they have conversations with each other and you just see people kind of coming together and like having conversations. And it's like, wow, I just, you know, if I can facilitate just like one person feeling inspired, like that's amazing. And like, if you can really, I think a lot of people who came to the hackathon, the Rainbow's End one was, it was their first time. And so that was also really important to me that I made sure that like people felt really well onboarded and
yeah.
It wasn't something, because I think you might come across this, like the sort of hackathon culture is quite intense. Like, it's like you only have your first hackathon once and it's like a really important one, right? Because you realize, you know, there's just so many things that you have to learn very quickly. And
yeah.
It's really a reckoning with like how you are as a person when you come to these events, because you really start to learn about like what you're like and in a team and like, you know, how you see yourself and your ideas and your priorities. So that was like a challenge as well, was trying to figure out how to like facilitate that for people who both were experienced hackathon members but also beginners, and making sure it was really demystified for people so that they felt comfortable attending, because I think that was really important to make sure that it was like very democratized in that way. But yeah.
Maybe I think you touched on a point that about how intense it is. And I actually think it's counter to almost everything you would encounter in quote unquote regular society. So, you know, you go to school, it's predictable. The people you're in class with at your same level, all of it is like a predictable environment, but you get dropped in a hackathon and, you know, so unpredictable. You have people that have been going to hackathons 20 plus years. You have people that is their first hackathon. You have people that are real specialists in a certain industry. You have people that are generalists and can do different stuff. And really there's like, it's a melting pot of all these different people. And maybe that's what could be intimidating for lots of people, the lack of predictability.
Yeah, especially with a hackathon that's like, well, with a tech-focused thing, and also something where, you know, it's like an intimate subject such as sex and intimacy. I think from what I experienced with people who were apprehensive about coming because it was their first time was also just this idea of like people thinking that they didn't have tech skills, so they couldn't participate. And that's just like the opposite of what you want to have, right? That's really the opposite effect, because we need people who are like diverse in their skills and their backgrounds and their experiences of the world to like come together at these things. And that's a really difficult thing to overcome, I think, in terms of like the messaging around a hackathon, because people are very insecure about, you know, whether they're going to fit somewhere and they want to feel accommodated. And like, it's definitely a challenge because, But then, yeah, after the event, obviously, people are like, oh, everyone was lovely and amazing, and that was great. And so that's kind of like quite an interesting challenge, I think, especially if you're trying to really, I think the Rainbow Zen Hackathon was almost like you were trying to capture anyone who was interested and really give people that platform to participate, because there were more experienced hackathon people there who, in the feedback, they suggested it being a bit more sort of like heavy on the sort of techie hackathon typical thing. And I think that's totally valid, but also you've got to start somewhere. And I think it's so nice to kind of bring these more experienced people in to like, you know, help, I guess, second, like without realizing they sort of secondhand, like mentor the people who are new, which is like super nice. But yeah, it is a very chaotic place. And like, I think it's just a really nice place also where people lead by example, like just, this super open space people can share like where they're at and where they've come from. And it's really amazing to see how people behave in that space, actually, in that such a short space of time. And, you know, you see people being apprehensive at the start and then suddenly it all disappears and it just becomes this like, you know, anything goes fun, kind of happy place. Well, I hope so, at least that's how I experienced it.
How did you compensate with, obviously everything now is virtual, and any hackathon that really is hardware based is kind of at a disadvantage, well, a lot at a disadvantage, you know. There's hackathons I've been to and they're giving out Arduinos, Raspberry Pis, and all this interactive tech that you can program, which is actually, compared to pure software, I like the hardware hackathons, where, especially when I'm given devices. Messy. Yeah, I'm given devices that I wouldn't usually have. I have access to software in my house, but, you know, all these kind of new weird devices I don't have access to, and I go to the hackathon, and maybe I have access to 3D printers at the hackathon. And that is an amazing opportunity that's lost during the pandemic or when you can't be in a physical space. So how could you compensate for that? Or is that things that you thought about that when you go into physical spaces again, your hackathons are going to be 100 times more amazing?
Well, a nice massive job I gave myself before the Rainbow's End was that I made kits for people, and I shipped people kits. Wow. So there was like a sort of small extra cost if you really wanted the kit, but it was more like, it was super basic. It was basically like a PCB that I made which had two motors, two different kinds of vibration motors. Mm-hmm. It had a different resistors to change the strength of the motor and a button. So it's just like a really basic vibrator, which was, you know, just kind of a gesture. And then I also included like some crafting materials like felt and thread and clay and, you know, tape and just like stuff that people could get hands on with. Because even when you're not, even if you're not going to use it for the final thing, just to like be working with your hands is such an important thing. Yeah. I think when you're working on ideas like this, like you have to have something that you're holding or looking at or shaping or molding, because it, you know, it's actually like neurologically, like in your brain, it sort of, if you look at sort of the size of the hands in the map of the brain and sort of like homunculus, I don't know if you've seen that, it's like the hands are like such a massive part of our brain. And so if you're not activating the hands when you're thinking of ideas, like you're missing out on like a lot of potential, like a lot, saving yourself a lot of like stress if you like have something to play with. So in the end, the kits were really stressful because I had to sort of like prepare like 30 kits and send them out and ship them, and it was around COVID and Brexit, so the customs thing and all the shipping was awful. But in the end, it was just like a really nice gesture because everyone then had something to play with, and even if you didn't have a massive workshop full of Arduinos and you know, sensors and motors, it didn't really matter because you could sort of say, oh, I'm here too, and I'm participating. So that was like that's a good thing. And we're definitely in the next Rainbow's End, the sort of Rainbow's End part two hackathon we've got planned, which we'll be announcing really soon, actually. We're going to be doing like a whole sort of half day before the event, where it's like a real hands-on intro for people who don't know anything about Arduino or anything. And it's going to be a bit more like of a sort of rapid like foundation of how to make hardware, basically, which will be really nice, I think, because people obviously love that stuff, especially when they're sat at their desks just typing away all day. It's like so nice to get out of that. But it's true, it's like a really, it is a challenge. And like I said, it's just, it's really interesting though, because it's a challenge, but it's also like an opportunity to think about how you can work with the sort of limitations of the digital format to your advantage, and really kind of, yeah, I guess ideas don't have no, you know, they can be, ideas are ideas and they're sort of like fluid and they can be in any format, virtual or physical. But then it's kind of about like helping people realize those ideas and like how to best put them on their like journey of, you know, problem solving and idea generating and stuff. Yeah.
I think you inspired me to think about hardware a little bit differently. I've been so heavily focused on software. I guess because it's easy, right? I just turn my laptop on.
Yeah. And I can it's not easy for a lot of people, but, you know, don't discredit yourself. But no, in terms of accessibility, it's available. Yeah. It's accessible, right?
Yeah. In terms of accessibility, it's a lot easier. Like, even now, I have a Google Cardboard, but I don't have no, like, official VR device. I don't have a 3D printer. I have 3D printing experience, but I don't have, in my corporate job, I was doing 3D printing as an engineer. But I don't own a 3D printer. I don't. I do have some Raspberry Pis. I do have some Arduinos. Don't use them. I used them once. But it's definitely making me think differently about hardware, especially the future. I think a good question to ask you would be about open source, because your devices are open source, right?
So at the moment with the vibrator kit that we have, we're sort of working on the second prototype. And so we're going to open source the first prototype. And then for the second prototype, we're going to open source parts of it so that people can like modify and bring their own kind of, reprint their own tips and that kind of thing. And then, I'm still sort of figuring out like how much and how to open source it kind of like officially. But yeah, all of the sort of documentation for it will be available and accessible. So that's really important to me.
And that's along the lines of hackathon culture, right? Sharing, collaboration, open source, and especially when it comes to, I guess, devices within the sex tech space, you don't really have many competitors, do you? You don't really have many companies building open source devices. Yes, there's lots of sexual related devices, but I don't think there's too many open source ones, are there?
Not kind of officially. I mean, there is a really amazing kind of thriving sex tech kind of scene, that like a maker sex tech open source kind of inspired scene, where people are sort of really working on their own stuff. I mean, when you say open source, I guess there's a different like approaches to that, isn't there? There's like this kind of official open sourcing of something, or there's just like participating in a conversation and sharing knowledge for free, and you know, like really just playing your part in kind of furthering that part of the industry. And I think that's definitely a really amazing sort of area within sex tech. Like, there's so many amazing projects, and there's loads of Discord channels and communities of people who are just like working on stuff and sharing their results. And I'm lucky enough to like know a bunch of people and be friends with people through just like reaching out and collaborating or saying hi or whatever. And it's just such an amazing community, because people are like, you're kind of together with people who are sort of working on this common goal, which I guess for a lot of people is to kind of destigmatize something that's been like historically extremely stigmatized and very sort of taboo. And I think also the sort of sex and DIY like doesn't really seem to fit sort of like conceptually. But actually, that's not because it doesn't fit. That's because our approach or our understanding of sex is limited by like society's kind of sanitization of it. Just like society and tech is sanitized as well. And that sort of has implications on the user and the sort of experience of the person, you know, using it, which is why I think it's so nice to have hackathons, right? Because you're then just really breaking apart what tech should or could be. And you're kind of, especially the hackathons are a bit more creative and like focused around idea generation and like kind of speculating and dreaming, because you're then really able to like see the sort of humans behind technology, right? And like it really makes you realize the kind of the effect that big tech has in a way also on like people, and especially within the context of sexuality and sex. Like that's like a massive one, right? Because you know, some people argue that sex is somewhere at everything we do, you know. It's kind of like this very, very ever-present thing in everybody.
Yeah. What were the biggest things you learned from both participating in hackathons and as a facilitator and organizer?
So from the perspective of like a hackathon attendee, my first hackathon was actually another sex tech hackathon at Goldsmiths in 2015 at Goldsmiths University in London. And it was their second sex tech hack. And it was, I think it was the last one they did in the end. And that was awesome. And it was really, I came by myself and I was like, what is this thing? Like, what is a hackathon? Because the word hack is thrown around so liberally these days, isn't it? It's kind of like, I once went to a hackathon. It was actually like an accelerator for, you know, where people just brought ideas that they already were working on, and they worked alone on their ideas. Like it, and I, you know, there's so many different approaches. But anyway, what I learned from that one was like, really to like let go of that sort of independent, introspective mindset. And then also just like the value of having fun with stuff, like the huge value of like finding joy in the making process and not being protective or, afraid or, I guess, held back by your own sort of personal perspectives on yourself or your capabilities or whatever. Just being really like, fuck it, let's just like do this fun thing and let's just like ride that energy. And that's like, I'm sure it's like an instinctual energy that comes out, right? Like it is a very unique energy at these events, but it must be somehow like related to like this kind of joy of like connecting with other people and this like very human thing. And so it's funny to then sort of discuss it as if it's like a new thing, because really I think we need more opportunities for people to like have that kind of experience. But I guess like parties and raves maybe also like have a similar like effect, but it's like,
I was just thinking about when people talk about Burning Man, it kind of, it's for me, like I see the same kind of resemblance to hackathons, raves, you know, where you talk about music.
It's a really good point.
Like underground music kind of, you know, the art scene that's not quite commercial. Like it's still indie artists in their very small studios coming together, just talking about art and talking about ideas.
Yes, loving it. Yeah. I guess the challenge of like the more kind of cultural, like niche things is that the concept of like embracing nerdiness and just like being super into something is like a bit uncool. So like there is so much more like social anxiety around the more sort of like culturally fashion related subcultures, right? Because you kind of like they're driven by the concept of you being afraid to not fit in, I guess, which is like quite a toxic thing really, isn't it? But I think, yeah, in terms of like, I mean, I have my apprehensions about like talking about Burning Man. I've never been, but I've sort of done similar things. Like I sort of did my residency in the desert, which was compared. And I think like it is similar in that you're kind of, with Burning Man, it's different, I guess, because you're really battling the elements. You're like actually trying to survive, like, which is like, which really brings out that caring side in people, which is really nice. But I suppose also in a hackathon, you know, you're really overloading yourself with energy drinks. You're not getting any sleep. It's maybe like you sleep on the floor of like the venue because you're like working on it. Maybe it's a similar like battle, but yeah, it is definitely this kind of giving, sharing of like just like passion of the subject and this real like embracing of each other's obsession with what they do and what they're interested in, which I think is really, really great to bring out.
Do you think, so there's a phase, right? And you know, all the things we mentioned to mainstream culture can be considered like counterculture. So the participants you're getting are the participants you're getting are trying to think about sex differently and also push different narratives about sex. Do you think when that goes into the mainstream, it kind of changes in given a different form? For example, there might be some sex tech products that are produced in one of your hackathons, but when it goes commercial, or if it goes commercial, when it becomes an actual company, it changes completely. Do you think that's what happens? Or what do you have any views on what happens with these ideas once they leave these spaces?
Yeah, it's a really good point because then that boils down to like the sort of mission of the hackathon, like particularly. And I guess every hackathon has a different mission. A lot of the time they are sort of a bit more industrial and focused around like, you know, becoming business solutions in the real world. In terms of sex tech hackathon, for me, like the one that I facilitated was very much like creative ideas. And in that way, it was almost like quite like a therapeutic healing process for some people who were joining because they were just able to work their ideas out and talk about stuff. And I'm very careful not to like blend that sort of like meditative, reflective, therapeutic environment with something that's like supposed to be then capitalized on. Like it's, you know, it doesn't sit well with me to like to kind of draw those comparisons or whatever. But like, but definitely in terms of, you know, that's also the point of a sex tech hackathon is that in the mainstream, sex tech is obviously like a very rapidly growing and evolving industry. But then there is still this debate about like the human sexuality is like, just you can't create one device that suits that. And like, you know, there's such a wide spectrum of bodies, of imaginations, of experiences and minds that exists. And so it's really a sort of almost like a storytelling exercise too, to come to this hackathon and to have ideas, because you're really, you know, exploring your own interests and sort of participating in that sort of the history of sex tech, even if it isn't the sort of industrial history. But yeah, there are also, you know, people do also think of solutions and ideas that are so applicable in the real world and that I can, you know, reliably see becoming products or services or things. And I think there are a lot of challenges within sex tech if you were going to go down the route of making something more commercial. But yeah, I think I mean, for the hackathons that I run, I'm still very interested in that sort of like slightly more counterculture, lo-fi, like fun, exploratory thing rather than sort of more commercial side. But definitely if there was an opportunity for me, I would love to be more intentional about that more kind of industrial side of things, especially if people are on board, you have credibility and sort of like connections to make things real or to award people with the opportunity, it would be a great collaboration because you're really then able to like bring the best parts of this kind of more lo-fi experimental approach and then really advance like the industry by kind of being endorsed by these more kind of like, I guess, big players in the industry. But yeah, it's a tricky one to navigate, I guess, once you, especially with the subject of sex tech, because you have to be kind of mindful of people's intention for coming to the hackathon and making sure that like everyone feels like they're in a good place and like they know what they're sort of, they know what the outcome's going to be kind of thing. But yeah, it's a good question.
I think your take's interesting and I probably don't see enough of it. Like I interview a lot of organizers and facilitators and they lean more to the business and real world usability rather than the therapeutic creative side. And I think you're really touching on the therapeutic creative side. And I can't justify why. I guess because software and hardware isn't seen as art, it's seen as engineering. It has to have a function.
A solution, right? Yeah.
That means you have to have
it's a means to an end. Exactly. Like it's a means to lots of money. Basically.
And I think what you're touching on is no technology, you know, writing code can be as much as an art as, you know, writing a script or, you know, especially now with VR, AR and it's what is going on? Sorry. With VR, AR, it's all kind of becoming blended. You have these metaverses and virtual worlds that is kind of blurring the lines a lot more than it used to be with technology and art. Even if we look at, you know, even Instagram, and it's the worlds have kind of been merged into two.
Yeah, it's almost inseparable, isn't it? Yeah, definitely.
I think my last question is around advice for participants and organizers on hackathons. So I ask this question a lot because there are a lot of new people that are not even sure. And you touched on something that was really good about, should I go to a hackathon? I don't have tech skills. What advice would you have for people considering going to your next hackathon or someone else's next hackathon, but they're not quite sure whether it's for them?
I think definitely don't be afraid to reach out to the organizers to really kind of get a feeling of where they're at with it and what their intentions are and what they're planning. If the organizers get back to you and make you feel at home and like you want to do it, then that's a good sign. And if they don't get back to you or if they respond with something that doesn't make you feel good, then maybe that's also a sign. As much as like I understand that there are hackathons where there's like thousands of people, in which case maybe that's a bit different. This is probably more on the smaller scale end. Although, you know, everyone deserves, if you're creating a space, everyone who's coming into that space like has a right to kind of request like that information from you, you know. So I guess that's a point for organizers of hackathons, like really decide if your hackathon is going to be beginner friendly, because as much as it's fun for some people to be thrown in the deep end with these things and just like join, you come in and be like, yeah, here we are, like I'm just gonna work it out, for some people like that might actually be not a very fun experience. And like especially if you're touching on subjects that are quite intimate, personal, and require some care, I think just really consider the sort of then the language you use and the way you brief people. And you know, it's okay with hackathons, I think, to be exclusionary, to say this is for people who are experienced at hackathons, because maybe you don't want to put the sort of just that energy into facilitating beginners. But I mean, from my perspective, I'm all about sort of bringing people in. So, you know, that's my role, I guess. But I think for organizers, it's quite important maybe to think of like what your role is in terms of instead of just being like, people have just signed up and they're going to come, to really think about like how those people will feel like onboarding themselves or being onboarded. And for people who are not sure about coming to a hackathon or are looking to come to the next one of ours, like reach out, and we really try to do our best in terms of like defining all the different words, like what is a hackathon actually? And I think it's really valid, and no question is stupid. and no sort of feeling of apprehension is ill-placed or is like coming from somewhere that's not genuine. So like just kind of act on those feelings. And the main thing also, just like if you can do one thing, just don't deny yourself that experience. Just if you're worried about what might happen, or if you're worried about not being included, because ideally there's going to be someone there or a group of people there to make you feel very welcome when you get there. So that's like the one thing, is to like kind of overcome that, like the apprehension, if you really feel like it's something that you'd want to get into. Because I understand that a lot of people do have kind of reservations, and because it's scary, because it's unknown, isn't it? It's like, what is this weird thing? Do I know what I'm supposed to know? And then also just the fact that like no one really knows what the heck is going on. Like, especially at such a fast paced event, people are just like, I don't know what's happening, but we're just here. Yeah. So like, let's just sit and like enjoy the ride, you know? It's quite vague advice, but
I think it's very, very good advice. And I want to thank you, because it's really been amazing speaking to you.